Capital 263.
What up, what up? How are you doing? Welcome to Nai Nai and the Other Guys and Figuring Out Adulthood in 30 or so minutes. Now, this episode of Nai or Nai and the Other Guys podcast is brought to you by Kaizen U. Please put in the music for our sponsors. Thank you. If there's anything that the good people at Kaizen U understand is that starting a business is not easy. With so much to learn and so much to do and so little time, you will always find your hands full. In this day and age, any business that is intentional about reaching new customers needs a website. Unfortunately, websites are one of those headaches that businesses have to deal with. But Kaizen U has a solution for this. At Kaizen U's Digital Consulting, you can get this website created for you. Kaizen U takes time to understand your business, your target market, and helps you build the perfect website for your goals. Complete with affordable domains and hosting for your first year, this service is a perfect buffer for any startup. Listeners of this podcast will get a 10% discount on any digital consulting service from Kaizen U that you may require just by visiting kaizenu.co.zw/nwg. I said it, 10%. All you have to do is visit kaizenu.co.zw/nwg. Additionally, just to sweeten the deal, the first 5 people to contact Kaizen U can redeem a free 30-minute strategy session on digital consulting. All you have to do is visit kaizenu.co.zw. And to learn more, visit kaizenu.co.zw. And let me spell it for you. kaizenyou.co.zw. Now let's get to the show. Okay, guys, welcome back to 99 the Other Guys. Today, I put the noogies off, so they're like taking a break, and I have got very special people on the episode. If you guys have been following my Instagram or some of the comments, you have probably noticed a girl called Wimpy Kaya. We call her Wimpy, and it's not my fault. It's Wimpy because Archie and Jiri, who you guys know, I'm in a secret WhatsApp group with, they call her Wimpy. So what Wimpy did and what Archie did and what they conspired to do is they said, oh, now you were away for so long. You never told us anything. You just went for Airbnb and you just went out and traveled. You never told us anything. And I'm like, okay, but guys, not. So Wimpy slid into my DMs, like, you know, the cool guy I am. Oh. And she gave me this really long lecture about, listen, we need you to tell us what happened. Happened, right? And then she wanted to make it all woke, like, oh yeah, so that it can help the youth in Zimbabwe, so we can see how we can be able to relate. So basically, they want to live vicariously through my experience, which is fine. So I had a bright idea, being the guy that I am, having bright ideas and stuff, which is the reason why I was abroad doing school day anyway, right? I have a friend of mine who I traveled with from Zimbabwe to the UK. She's going to introduce herself on this podcast, and she's going to be one of our guests today. So she's got so much more. She's got so much energy. She's a noogie by energy. You know what I mean? We've got the same energy identifiers. And Wimpy, I'm gonna let these ladies introduce themselves, and we are going to go on. And the purpose of this segment is for us to share our time, she's got certain questions about our time abroad, and we are going to do that to the best of our capabilities, and we're going to speak on it, especially how to relate to how we are and how we find things back here. I am going to start with the person who's probably going to be like the question asker. Wimpy Kaya, why don't you introduce yourselves formally to the Noog Nation?
All right. Thank you, Onai. Thank you for this opportunity and for having me on here. Hey, with what you've already said about me, I don't know if I can reintroduce myself beyond what you've said. So yes, I'm Wimpy Kaya. I love conversations. I love good, meaningful conversation. And when I'm not creating or in conversation or doing something along those lines, I am sliding into people's DMs, like Onai has already said. Yeah, I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in that kind of way. So I still have to exonerate myself of that. Yeah, basically that's it. I'm a lover of conversation, and that's why I am here. And I would not let Onai just go, like, dude, you can't skip the country for 18 months, be gone, and that's it. No story, no, and then this happened and then that happened. So we wanted this catch-up session. So yeah, basically that's me in a mixed bag kind of thing.
I also just have to let you know that Wimpy is also like a really smart person. Where we actually met was at NAST, where she was doing she was doing some insurance stuff. So, you know, insurance is that's for crazy people who like numbers. And she's like a really smart girl. So I really like the fact that she's also quite accomplished as well in the stuff that she does, money matters and stuff. So that's great.
Thank you, sir. So
shout out to you. And then of course, I've got my fellow Shivning alum, I don't want to call it Chopi, but yeah, Chopi, yeah. But Miss Tatenda Mchopa, talk to me.
Eesh. You took it there. Hi.
Hi.
So my name is Tatenda, but y'all can call me Chopi. I think that goes for everybody, really. Yeah. So everybody, even my parents call me that now. So you might as well jump on. Yes, so I am a Shivning alum. So I was there in the UK studying at the University of Leeds. And yes, I did a STEM program. I'm a geo data scientist. So I just sorted that out because it sounds really cool.
Sounds cool.
Wow.
So I studied geographic information systems. So yes, so I'm one of those STEM ladies. I'm really into that stuff. I love to talk, and that is why I'm here. I'm sure that's why Onai thought she should bring me here, because I love to talk too. And I'm happy to come and share my perspective. I've actually been looking for a space to kind of share my experiences and some of the things that I've learned about myself, about my fellow countrymen, about life in general, while I was in the UK. So let's get to it.
Just get to it. No, just a quick one. Just before we get into it, this is totally not related, right? If the newbies were here, because today's Father's Day. So happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, all the dads, anyone who has sired a child. And I'm going to leave it there. I'm not going to say, and those who are there in their children's lives, because, or all the mothers who've been acting like fathers, right? And I just want you to think about it just 1 minute, why do we feel the need to say Happy Father's Day to mothers? We never do that to fathers. Say Happy Mother's Day to single fathers. I just kind of feel I love you women, but I think sometimes just let this one go. Let it be for the dads. You know what I mean? This is not an old parents matter thing.
Something. Oh no, you took it there.
You know, these celebrations are mainly for women or by women. I don't even know that, or I don't even think that some fathers are aware that it's Father's Day today. They're like, oh, well, whatever.
Because
don't care.
No, you don't. I texted my dad today and I said, Happy Father's Day, Mr. Shoniwa. And his response was to me as cold as ice, but I liked it. He says, thanks for remembering your father. Keep it up and stay safe.
See, it's like you should have been wishing me Father's Day anyway. So well done for doing what you're supposed to be doing. So there's no emotion attached to that. It's just
none.
You're supposed to.
As if I hadn't said it, there's another father that I'm saying Happy Father's Day to. You know, because your father. But anyway, I just want to throw it out there. Just want to get that off my chest. But Wimpy, I'm gonna let you.
Can we wish potential fathers a happy Father's Day? You guys?
No, I'm single. I'm not a dad.
But everybody's a potential father, though. Everybody.
No, we don't say happy anniversary because everyone has got a potential relationship. No, we don't do that.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Then that just defeats the purpose. Okay. Then everybody would just be like me also.
Yeah,
my son is a potential father. No, at least I'm gonna wish him.
No, we can't do that. All right, no, I just wanted to throw this out there. Now that everyone's comfortable, Wimpy, where would you want us to start? Tell us, what do you want to know?
Hey, I want to know everything. Like you had already, someone mentioned that you guys really got a wonderful opportunity of a lifetime, and there's a lot of us who would want to know a whole lot of details about that. Like, we want to kind of vicariously live through you guys' experience and also kind of map it for ourselves, see how that can help us, what we can do with it, and even just to have fun and to know that you guys had a good time. It's good enough for us. So maybe just as an icebreaker of sorts, you know, being a Chevening scholar or alumni as you are now is a big deal. So first things first, congratulations, guys. That is big. That is mighty big. It's a big deal. Because it's like an official endorsement that you guys are doing something meaningful on this earth. We may not even have to know what it is, but yeah, that's mighty endorsement there. So yes, and also it speaks to you having had a very big fat yes in life. But for somebody who's been that can be intimidating to somebody who's been in a place where they've been getting a series of no and no and no and rejections and all of that. And it's easy for them to think that for you guys, your life is all about being yes and it's been easy. But I'm guessing you've had some no's along the journey too. So maybe just to kind of start this thing, how do you deal with rejection so that you can keep pushing until you get that one very big fat yes of a lifetime that makes it worth it? Yeah. So doesn't matter the scenario, whether it's school, whether it's relationship, whether it's work, whether it's whatever. How do you deal with rejection? Where we started.
Okay. I mean, for me, with a lot of things, disappointments, I try not to take them personally. So, for example, if say I had applied for a scholarship, so I applied for a couple of other things. I've applied for the Beckett Trust. I've applied for the MasterCard scholarship, and I got rejected, amongst other things. And I tried not to take it in a way to say there's something wrong with me in particular. I took it as it's not the right time. So when it's that way, you see it as I just need to keep pushing until the time is right. So it doesn't actually stop you from doing what you're doing. You just make yourself better and better. And I found that for Chevening, I didn't apply like 3 years before because at that time, I did not feel like I would get it. And at that time, I think they wanted you to pay money for IELTS for like the English language test right ahead, like right when you started. And I was like, no, I'm not paying. So I didn't want to pay. So the reason why I applied the time that I then got it was because then they didn't ask us to pay right from the get. But besides that, I just did not feel like I was ready to apply. And so that's, again, where it comes in the context of time. It's not that there's something that you're doing terribly wrong. It's just that at that time, you're not particularly ready for that opportunity. And so you just keep getting better and better, and then you apply again. So that's how I take rejection. It's not that I'm a failure. It's that the time is just not right. And then it helps me to kind of focus, refocus. Yeah.
Perfect. It's comforting to know that the no's are not just particular to other people, because it's easy to put you guys on a pedestal of all successes. So I'm glad you told your story.
Most of us didn't get it on the first time, isn't it? And most of us had applied a couple of times.
I'm one of those who applied once for Chevening and then I got it. But this is the thing you need to know. With Chevening, you can get a yes, or you can be thrown into the reserve, or you can get a no. Like, I got a reserve, so I didn't get an outright.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't get an outright rejection. So one of the things that's really difficult about taking a no is when you see other people getting a yes. And that's really, really nerve-wracking. And the thing about the Chevening process, at least getting it, one of the things that is interesting was you get your reserve, you're on the reserve list. Because you've applied, you're going to get invited to other, like, Forum and Commonwealth office events and British Council events. So I remember going to the Queen's birthday, knowing that I had a reserve. So I'm meeting all the Tatendas. They are celebrating. They are happy because they've got their yes. They're going to the UK. And I'm here sitting on a maybe if, like, you know, and with reserve, you don't know what is going to be the factor that'll get you in. And, you know, one of those things, I'm not saying this is the truth, this is the reason why I then went in. But one of the things I once heard some other people saying is show up, still show up. Show up and still be the amazing person. I remember I went to that party and I think the energy that I had was as if I was going, because I was so happy for everyone was going. And, you know, I was with some of the people who were also on reserve, and we kept saying, no, it's all gonna be fine. It's all gonna be okay. Right. And I don't know how much that played a part into how they are watching you and how you behave, how you still keep your head up high, because the people who were selecting us were there as well. So, In as much as this is not a set in stone, and I don't know if that's the reason why I got it, right? One of the things I would say when it comes to when you hear the word no, you will hear no more times in your life than you will hear yes to opportunities. So what makes no's easier is getting the more and more. So the more you get to know, the more, I think, because the one of the toughest things is actually attempting because we are afraid of the no, right? So let me tell you one of the interesting things that I do now with Jerry and Archie in our WhatsApp group. Every time we apply for something, we if we get a reject letter, we share it in the group. It gets that edge off, and we say, well, it's gonna just keep it going. So one of the things about no, a no is just deferred success. So sometimes, like Choppy said, and I totally agree with her, sometimes if you believe in a divine power, it wasn't yours. If it's a no, it wasn't yours. Whatever is yours is going to come. It might be tough, but it's going to come, and have that hope that you will get what you will want to get. I applied to Leeds too. I gave them a no. Right? Like, I gave them a no because that wasn't the place for me. But I got a no from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine as well. But I got one at Edinburgh, which was the years that aligned with me and it aligned with the scholarship. And it was the best experience I could have had because I was specifically at Edinburgh, even though it's number two public health to the London School of Hygiene. But I had the best experience there. So a no is basically, this is not yours. So keep your hope up. Keep your head high. Especially keep your head high. So I think that's how we deal with the no.
Perfect. I'm happy with that. That's really well laid out. All right. So now that you went abroad, you saw it, what did you like about being in the diaspora? I know it's a little bit of a broad thing, but you can talk to us about whether it's food, culture, system, education, people, anything that was striking to you. Onai, girls, and Chopi, I'm not sure.
If I like the girls abroad, wow.
Well, yes, the guys. Well, hello.
I know the sisters are waiting to hear this one out. So we're like, so were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think besides the guys, yes, the guys, I think, yes, it comes with, I mean, it comes with anywhere, really. There's guys everywhere. There's an intrigue that is there for, you know, guys, I'll speak for guys in the UK that I encountered. There's a bit of intrigue when they meet a girl that's from Africa. They want to know what your life is like and stuff. So there is a bit of intrigue that surrounds you. I don't know if that translates that way for everybody, but like for me, that's how it was. People are just really curious about you. It's exciting to meet this person from this different place. So people kind of gravitate around you. They want to talk to you. They want to hear your story and stuff. What I really, really liked about my time in the UK was just the fact that things work. Yeah.
Facts.
Yes. Facts. So I'm that girl.
An ATM get money.
So let me tell you my story. So I mean, I came from here, and I had the card. So they give you a card to say, oh, this is where your money is, and you can withdraw, you can spend it from the card straight ahead. But then me coming from a place where I needed to be having cash, you know what I mean? We had that first allowance come into my card. I went in and withdrew the whole of it because I wanted to have that cash in my hand. Like, yo, I was excited, guys. I had the cash in my wallet for a bit. I remember my friend saying to me, why do you have all that cash?
You were like, thinking like a Zimbo. Like, I need cash all the time.
Ega boos the cash.
Cash.
Yeah, you've got to have cash.
Because can us make cash. We can us make cash. Osmunu.
And after a while, and you know, the craziest thing about it is because I had so much cash and I didn't have to use cash all the time. Like half the time you get there, like even at markets confirm, like open markets, people would have machines you can swipe. Like, so like half the time you did, not even half the time, you don't need to have cash. Like you don't at all. True. And I was losing money, like literally. I was losing notes because it was just kind of sitting around or it'd be in my pocket randomly and I'd end up losing money. But then that's just one example of the things that, you know, really gave me an idea of how different things were going to be for me during that year. It's just the concept of knowing that you can actually get home and think, let me take a shower. And boom, you just take a shower. True. It's as simple as that. There's no complications. There's no, there's no complications to certain things. Yes. There's things that we have started to see as luxuries, things that we have started to appreciate a whole lot here that mean absolutely nothing over there. And for me, yes, I did have a shock. Because of that. I mean, every time, yes, you've traveled quite a bit, but every time you leave after you've been in this circumstance or in this situation, every time you leave and get to a place where things are different, you're going to get that shock. So I did. I got that little bit of a shock. Just the thought of knowing that you have a solid income coming. There's no stories.
Yeah.
There's no, this month, yeah, I will give you on the 22nd, not on the 19th, for example. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the one thing that I really like, just having things that work.
You know, one of the things, just to add on to what Tatenda said, is that I agree with everything that she said because it all was a reflection to me. So I'm going to try and break this down almost the same way she did. I really appreciated when it comes to the people, right? When it comes to the people, I really appreciated how honest they were in their dealings and everything, right?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Just hold on. This is going to get cut out. Because this is what happens when you record at home.
It's alright. I just had my son come through and just kind of say hello. He just didn't pop up on the screen, but
alright.
Like I'm here.
See, this is what I like about recording podcasts, because you actually get to see the true nature of the things that are going on. Okay, so let me start the video again. All right, there we go. So one of the things I appreciated is the people that you're with, the young people that you're with in this general space and time. In Zimbabwe, when someone says, so let's meet up at this time, or we are going to do this, people kind of keep their word. You know what I mean? There's a speed in which people do things that I'm very impressed by. When someone says, I'm going to send you an email to do this and this and that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get that email. When you're talking about school, when someone says you're going to have people coming through to your house at 1 o'clock this afternoon to fix this and that, people will come through and fix this and that. And they'll do it until they have fixed it, until it's done. Right. And it's one of the things that I feel like, you know, we always are asking for change in Zimbabwe. We are saying the government this and that, but how many times do you honestly tell your friends where you are when they say, so what time are you going to get here? And you know, I know I'm at the corner and just still at home taking a shower, right? There's certainly a power to just being honest. And I think one of the other things is that people are able to say no and they don't have to explain themselves, right? Like you say, guys, can we link up on Friday? You tell a person who you think is your friend, can we link up on Friday? And like, no, I'm sorry, I can't. In Zimbabwe, someone said, let me see what my schedule looks like. And then on the Saturday, like, no, I'm coming. But this person would have made up their mind way back before that.
Way back.
So we have got this thing where we don't, or someone asks you, are you able to do so and so? And we feel we are afraid that I have been caught out. I'm supposed to be able to do so and so. So we lie. As Zimbabweans, we lie. No.
We're overly polite.
You know what I mean? And it doesn't help our cause, because there, when you say you are supposed to or you're able to do something, you will do it and they will pay you for it. They'll pay you by the hour. Mm-hmm. But so you're supposed to be, if you're supposed to be at work at 8, you have to arrive at 10 to 8. And people are there at 10 to 8. You start working at 8. They will pay you for the amount of time that you have worked, because you say you can deliver.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then when you deliver, they will measure you by the amount of work that you've done and the amount of hours you've done, and you will get paid on time. In Zim, work starts at 8, but we get there at 7:30. Right. We lie about how our performance contracts. We muddle up figures. It's a gray area. You never really get anything straight. There's a very bad sense of accountability, not from the top, but from the bottom. So of the friends are not as accountable. I don't know if you've experienced that, Choppy. Like, there's a certain sense of transparency and accountability. And I'm not talking about people up there. I'm talking about amongst each other. So in the UK, I feel like there was more of that, and it helps communication become very clear amongst people. So amongst friends, I know that, or maybe Choppy says, I'm not going to be able to make it because I'm taking care of my mom today. You know she's taking care of her mom. Don't ask her, why don't you? No. This is what is important to her. And what is important to you is important to you. The one other thing, and I know this probably isn't like the school thing, I really, really appreciated the sense of independence that people have. And the first place I saw it was in how they dressed. In Zim, if something is in fashion, it's in fashion for the whole thing. Like everyone's dressing the same, right? We do not want to think differently. We are all thinking alike. I remember I had a classmate who always wore green. She'd wear green dress, green top, or green, the green pants. This is what she liked. This is what she was used to. This is what who she was, right? So I really appreciated that sense of independence that people have. So if I'm a person who likes dressing in suits, I'll dress in suits. And society is not going to judge me for dressing in suits, right? If I'm, if I want to dress up in short skirts, that's a girl. Or even guys want short skirts. Like they could totally do that.
I was going to say, even as a guy, if you wanted to dress up as a girl and you felt like this is how you want to express yourself, we would all just kind of move on with it. We wouldn't even look twice at you. Even though the instinct for me was to always be like, can you guys see this? But then because of where you're at, you know not to do things like that. You're just kind of like, okay, you know what? That's their life. Okay, cool. You move on with it. But I mean, I think it's just one of those things, like Anaya was saying, just the sense of how things work. Is really because of that honesty. There's a lot of, the honesty system is everywhere. You see how, Anaya, you've seen how at some gas stations you had firewood just kind of laying out in the front.
Yeah.
And like people knew to get their fuel, they put it in their cars by themselves. Mm-hmm. No fuel attendant, they'll do it. And no then they would carry themselves, they walk themselves into the shop, make the payment. If they want to get something like that's displayed outside, not in the shop. And we didn't have guards looking after this.
You don't have people checking your tickets to see if you've bought. You don't have people at the till most of the time.
Everybody believes you're going to do the right thing and pay for your fuel. I've always said, like, why don't we just drive off? Though? Like, what if we just MacGyver it, you know.
Just but steal a bit.
No, we don't. It's not even like, people like, but why? Why would you do that?
Why would you do that?
Like why don't you just pay for it?
Yeah.
Yes.
So that sense of honesty, it's a big deal because what that does is we are able to trust each other. There's a social contract between each other that we're supposed to kind of look out for each other. You know what I mean? So that's one of the things that gets you as soon as you get there. People believe you. You don't have to lie about, I'm an essential worker. This is why I'm in town. No, you can literally say, I don't have food at home and the shops in my neighborhood don't have any food and the police will believe you and they will help you. You know what I mean? Like, it was really refreshing. Here in Zimbabwe, it's a constant fight. Yeah. So that's one of the things that I really appreciated about living abroad.
Well, here it's more like the situations have taught us to come up with a lie first before you even want to go to the truth.
Yeah.
I guess it's because I'm not.
You're absolutely right.
Kind of thing. So did you have any awkward moments or any awkward experiences where you're thinking, okay, someone take my receipt or can then you're giving them or something like that? I don't know. Something that was out of place that you would do if you were back here in Zimbabwe, but because you're in a different country where people trust each other, you didn't have to do it. You guys are woke. Oh my God. Nothing.
I think if anything that would kind of jump out to me is, so it's not about the till or anything. So there's one time I traveled to London. I don't even know what I was traveling for at that time, but, and I said this to Wimpy, one of the easiest ways to travel and to live in spaces is just go to a youth hostel. Right? Just go to a youth hostel, stay up there for the night. It's easy, right? You get to see other young people. So I go, and
so
I'm
sharing for that.
What are you? So I'm traveling. So youth hostel is basically like a house or a flat where people can just live for like two nights or so. So instead of like booking a very expensive Airbnb, you can just go to these places in this structure. So it's like a mini hotel, but you know, that didn't go to private school. So I go to this joint and I'm sharing a room with a girl. Like, she's sleeping on this bunk. I'm a guy sleeping on this bunk. There's another dude on this bunk, and there's another girl on that bunk. Right. And I did this many times.
You were sharing rooms with girls.
Sharing rooms with girls. So it's like, I did that many times, because that happened in Copenhagen as well when I first got there. That happened in London, not like once or twice when I traveled to London for the different things. Because I lived in Edinburgh. So I was traveling to London. Sometimes you need to, maybe it's a shaving event or one of those. Or you're just traveling, just visiting. But I lived like with girls, and I was like, so what's the big, what's the big deal with us being afraid to share spaces with women in very intimate spaces like rooms or when you're sleeping in the same place? So as a Zimbabwean, I started being afraid, like, I don't want to be caught staring or being mistaken as if I was staring or anything, because I don't want to look creepy or anything. But then it just goes back to that kind of trust thing. You can use the same bathroom. You can sleep in the same room with women, same room where they'll be asleep and nothing will happen. It is very possible. In Zimbabwe, that would have been your parents would, they would never, all right? They would never want that from you. Like, so I found that very, very, very different for me, like a bit of a shock, but then you kind of get used to it. You're like, all right, cool. Because you always wonder, what if this woman, this girl just comes out and claims that this guy raped me? Or like, what do you do? We've always got that fear. You know what I mean? Mm. But it doesn't happen because to them, they kind of are not expecting you to do it. So you don't do it. You know what
I mean? I think maybe for me, like one of those situations for me where it was like so different is just like the interactions that we'd have with the professors, where instead of this is my superior, you were kind of like colleagues. I don't know how it was in Edinburgh, but I figured it's like the same thing.
It's the same.
Because you have that rapport, like you're on first name basis. And one other thing, your titles, so Dr. So-and-so, Professor So-and-so, we don't do that.
Just call them by their
name.
They
don't do that. You're George, you're Steve, you're Mary. Like some of these people have written like, yeah. So some of these people
have written, you call me Mary.
Yeah,
like I'm at that level where I'm like, if I get a PhD, even my son will be calling me Dr. Mommy. Like, facts. You know what I mean? Like, that does something. That does something for you academically. I say that because it puts you at a level where instead of thinking that your opinions don't matter, you think in a way that says, yeah, it's not like you just get a book, you read from it, and that's what you're supposed to do. You start to think, okay, how can I make this better? Is there a way that my opinion, like voicing my opinion, is going to change things? Mm-hmm. And yes, you're allowed to do that because you can just go and talk to Steve. Hey, Steve, I was thinking of A, B, C, and D. So for me, I had an awkward moment where I went in and I was like, Dr. Carver, it's like, really, call me Steve. And I remember just looking at him kind of like, oh, and I didn't even realize that I'd done that. But then for me, because you don't address your superiors by first name, it's a cultural thing. We all know, like anybody who's a certain age, anyone who's around my mom's age is going to be mom to me. Anyone who's around my grandmother's age is Sambuya. So never mind that we work together or whatever, even at work, we'll be calling them mother. You know, you don't call them by, first name basis and all that. Yeah. So, you know, you don't even realize some of these things until you're kind of in that situation. So it was a little bit awkward. And even just the way I could just be honest and upfront, like I went in the one time I couldn't turn in my assignment on time. Mm-hmm.
Only once. I did that like 2-3 times.
My
dissertation was like that.
I was just about to say I had my dissertation, like I had it in like like last minute. But then these people are just very like open about it. Like I remember when I went in, I said, oh look, I will not be able to submit this on time. He was like, what is going on? Sit down. And I'm like,
now you have to find a story.
God, let me think of something. So I sat down. I'm like, yeah, so the thing is, and then he said, are you okay? Where are you from, by the way? And I'm like, I'm from Zimbabwe. It's like, oh, you guys are so brave. You know, I always admire people who have to travel. And I'm like, oh, we can talk.
Like, thank you for giving me an excuse. You're
I swear, Katinda, I swear you could literally say, I am mourning the death of our former president. And this is why. I kind of like one of the things that I really like, just I know I kind of cut you off, but even those experiences where you can literally say, I'm going through a heartbreak, so I'll not be able to hand in my assignment. And they'll be like, we understand mental health is important. So, you know, just when do you think you can hand it in? Do you need any help? Like, that's the difference. Here in Zimbabwe, not handing in, you know.
Like, you miss your son. You miss your son. So you miss your son. And that's why you can't submit your assignment. Huh? When are you going to stop missing him? When are you going to stop missing him so that you can do the work? You know?
I think it's very important. And just kind of just speak back. Like, I remember when I was working for this research institution and the boss was a doctor something. And I kept saying doctor, and she said, no, don't call me doctor. Call me Tatinda. Like, that was the name. That was like, call me. And she was serious about that. And just to add what Tatinda says, what this does, it removes that power dynamic. So that you are all at the level playing field. Where if this person says something that is disrespectful, you can say, no, I think that is inaccurate. So you will still, because of education, of course, in the halls of academics, you will still find a tiered structure. Sometimes it is gendered, sometimes it is colored, sometimes it's all this race. But definitely here in Zimbabwe, once you get a PhD, people are like, PhD. But there's like, it's not a big deal.
It is what it is.
And I think that's the one, when we try to relate back to our experience in Zim, we use education or having education as a barrier for us to interact. And this doesn't help us. We see playing out in Lobola. If this person's got a master's, this person's got a PhD, the price is higher. If you know that this person did this, I could literally see how people were treating me different when I came back. Right? But at school, like, you get, like, people are kind of, ooh, he went to school. They're like, I'm still the same old Onai. I just studied something.
Yeah, you were good. UK.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I really like how they try to make things. I'm not saying they're 100% good at it, but the approach to life, you will see that there are definitely some sort of structures which are created to make sure that you remove the gaps and access barriers and remove the barriers to access for people. So I know this is gonna round up in a second, and then I'm gonna send you guys another link so we can record on.
Cool.
Yes. How are we doing, Wimpy? Are we doing okay for you?
Fantastic.
You having fun?
I'm actually forgetting that I'm supposed to be listening in order to get the conversation going. But I'm actually enjoying the conversation for myself. I'm like, I'm trying to get into the minds of all of y'all. And seeing what you went through, what you experienced and all of that. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So what was the classroom dynamic like? Now, this is just outside while the time is rounding down. Was it different? Because I'm assuming both of you went to uni here in Zim. And then now you had an opportunity to see a different classroom setup with different ways of expressing yourself, your ideas and everything like that.
Support for this episode of Nai Onai and the Other Guys is coming from Kaizen U. Now listen guys, I get it. Sometimes it is very difficult to navigate the internet of things with just one Instagram account. Because every time you say link in bio, there is no link in your bio. And the reason why you don't have a link in your bio is because you don't have a website. And I know why you don't have a website. It is because it is absolutely difficult to create one, manage it with all the other different things you have to do for your business. But KaizenU exists just for you. KaizenU offers a wide range of digital consulting services that will drive customers to your brand, one of which is the creation and development of a website. Now, for a 10% discount, listeners of this podcast will be able to get any services that are given by KaizenU only by going to www.kaizenu.co.zw/nwg. That is www.kaizenu.co.zw/nwg. Now back to the show. So I guess the question you're asking is, what is the difference in the academic structure and how did we relate to it and the differences? And, you know, if we benefited from the differences in the academic institutions and the way they do things. I guess that's your question, yeah?
Yes, definitely. Okay. That's it.
Yeah. Choppy, you want to take this one?
I mean, yeah, I think just from what I was saying before, where there was room for me to speak, I liked that because I always felt at home, there's really no space for you to do anything outside of, you know, what was specifically laid out in the syllabus, like from like primary school, whatever. It's not like you're out there being encouraged to invent new things.
You mean in Zimbabwe, that is?
Yeah, in Zimbabwe. If anything, you're discouraged in a way. You're not really supposed to challenge the status quo. Whereas in the UK, for me, I've had the privilege of actually going to school in the US before as well. And I was in college there. And it was the same sort of thing where you're like, instead of just saying, okay, this is how we do it, it's like, okay, so this is how it was done before. How do you think we can improve on this? And this is the onus is on us. So you find that a lot of the institutions in the US or in the UK, those are the ones that are churning out inventions. Those are the ones, if there's a new type of, kettle that boils water 50 minutes or 50 seconds quicker, it's come from the university. Like somebody in the university did a dissertation on it, and then they've now put it out on the market and things like that. And I'm actually very happy because I know right now we've got these tech hubs that are starting up in universities here and institutions here. And this is like definitely what we should be doing more of. Cause I mean, look at us, we're making our own equipment for like COVID-19 and stuff. So we can do this. It's just that we haven't been allowed to, we haven't been encouraged to. And that comes from that, having that space to just be able to talk, because like I'm saying with the education systems there, it's more like your colleagues. So even when you write your thesis or whatever, you get to co-sign on things. They don't just tell you do things like this. You have opinions. You're allowed to come in and kind of express yourself. And that gives you a lot of creative power. You can actually make a difference. That's something that we definitely need back here as well.
I will agree with you. So let me tell you a story. So before I did the Master of Public Health in the UK, I applied for the Master of Public Health at a university in this country, right? And the first of all, to get in those class, they've got like 20 spots in that class. And what I heard is that of those 20 spots, 12 are going to go to doctors. 6 might go to nurses. And the other 2 will go to medical lab scientists, right? Now, I'm a scientist. I don't have the qualification of medical lab scientist, although I did have basically all of the things that they do. Like, you can throw me in a medical laboratory science lab and I would know what to do, right? Outside maybe 1 or 2 courses. But the barrier to entry for certain things is so tough here in this country, where our health systems are not as good. But you know, when I was studying at the University of Edinburgh in the UK, right, I was learning with people who did insurance and they were doing public health, because what they wanted to do was they wanted to do like health insurance. That's what they wanted to get into. I was learning with people who did acupuncture, right, in public health. I was learning with people who were teachers, but they were getting to public health. So there's a certain open-mindedness in which they approach everything that is really good that we don't do back home here. And it is to our own detriment, because, you know, you don't understand that public health, like just in my sense, and I'm sure you probably saw it in yours as well, Tatenda, where it's like you don't have to always be, it's not a cookie cutter sort of system. They want you to explore.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things they kept telling us the first day is, what we want to hear is your voice in your papers. So you could get marked down for just giving the regular answer.
Yeah. You know what I mean? What you took from the book.
We get that is what Wimpy said in this book. We get that's what Tatenda said. But what do you think? You know what I mean? So passing and failing was dependent on your ability to critically analyze things. I don't know if this is just the difference between undergrad and master's studies. But for us, you wouldn't get your typical assignments with a question and answer. It'll be like
the same. I mean, yeah, because I did undergrad, like I'm saying, I did part of my undergrad in the US, and it was the same thing, like you're saying, you're actually specifically asked for your opinion. So it's not like a master's undergrad thing. No, it's just
it's a Zimbabwe and away. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about that sort of system is, I remember I had one course where the report back on the assignment wasn't like what you guys did. No, it was like, just give a reflection on how you worked with people and the challenges you faced working as a group. That was the assignment. So they're marking you on the performance, not like the actual content, but can you just report mm-hmm. on what were the things that you found hard, difficult working with? And some people say, no, language barrier sometimes. And the reason they say this is because in public health at an international stage, this is what you're going to have to deal with. Those, we'd have assignments where like, we want you to write this as a blog. So don't be very technical. Blogs. Mm-hmm. So in Zim, if you ever tell your parents, no, I want to learn how to write a blog, they'll be like, Zim, a blog. But here you're studying it at an intellectual yeah, yeah. level where you get to kind of contribute that way. So I truly appreciate that kind of system where it's like your voice matters. And yeah,
it matters.
And you're encouraged to ask, always ask. Don't worry if you think it's a silly question, consistently ask. Just ask. If you don't know, ask.
Yeah. How about the times you get extra marks for talking about how you failed? Like, I remember one of my presentations, like, they were really impressed. I'm like, oh, I couldn't figure out how to put this on the map. So I was trying to do this and that. So maybe next time I need to try this. I don't know if it will work, but maybe I need to do that. And they're like, oh yeah, that's really, really good. And I got like, you know, a couple of extra points just for saying that I failed. Mm. Like, the idea is to see that you're actually engaging with the course enough to try something outside of, you know, what you had kind of told yourself you were going to do. I don't know if that makes sense, but it really does encourage you to not have like blinders. You see the whole world in a different light after you've gone through that, because what that does is there's no black and white, you know what I'm saying? And that's the world is not black and white. There's so much gray out there. And then you take that the way the world is, and then you put that in the education setting. So it's like you're being trained to go out in the world. Whereas I'll just speak about my education at Africa University. I don't want to talk about everybody else, but I'm talking about my personal experience. Mm-hmm. It was just, look, this is what's in the book. You come in, you take notes, and then when it's time for exam, you just regurgitate what you have there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then if that's not how it was in the book, you're probably going to get marked down.
That's true.
Yeah, so you need to basically replicate what's in there and put it out. And then that's not how the world works at all. Mm-hmm. You're going to go out there and you're going to have to figure things out. So that's I think that's one of those things that's put us as Zimbabweans in this position that we're in now, because we just, you know, we're taught to kind of just follow. Mm-hmm. We're not really encouraged to explore. We're just taught to just
disagree.
Or disagree. You can't really.
And so think for yourself.
Yeah, you're not. What's in the book?
Yeah, if it's outside the book, it's already wrong. So how are we ever going to develop to have inventions if we're always sticking with the book and always in the book? But anyway, this is a good thing. Open-mindedness, diversity, and all of that. But now that you're back in the country and you're probably also incorporated back into the workplace, are you implementing that kind of thinking, that kind of doing, that kind of, okay, I have my ideas, I speak, or when you try to do that? Now that you went to university outside the country, you want to tell us what to do. Do people come at you in that kind of way that, okay, so now because you went outside the country, you think you know everything. You think you tell us how to do things. Is it the right way? Do you get back like that? Or are you asked to be different?
This needed to be recorded as a video. Because the faces you were making were just...
Well, I'm recording it as a video. It's actually recording as a video.
I think we should put it out as a video because some of these faces, y'all...
Do you want to go for this one, Tatinda? Whilst I think, do I want to say anything nasty about my current employer?
No. As for me...
Okay, go.
Do you know what? Yeah, okay. So this is just not specific to this time that I've gone and studied and come back. Because like I said, I've done this before. And
you're a veteran. You're a veteran at learning outside the country. Hey, you've been through the struggle.
Yeah. I've been there. And then I'm that person who's always, I've never felt like I have a calling outside of Zimbabwe. So I've had opportunities to go, but I've never, ever felt like I'm called to lead from outside. I've always felt like I'm called to lead from within, and I've always come back home, always. And the one thing that strikes me about coming back home is the level of resistance that
to change.
Then meet. I know that in general, because I don't think this is specific to Zim per se, but in general, there is resistance to change everywhere. But more so here, I find that maybe it's the current setting, but like the more educated you are, the harder it is to get a job here, because then you're more expensive. And you're just a problem. You're disruptive, eh? You're disruptive. So it becomes harder, you know, to be employed. And that's a shame. That's a real shame. I know a couple of people who have pretty good master's degrees who have failed to gain employment solely because people are like, yeah, I know you're overqualified. And you're like, no. This job needs somebody with a PhD. It's too much. People say, no, we don't have that kind of money. You know, yeah, it's very difficult because, like I'm saying, you come in and you've got all these new ideas. And I've been told before that, yeah, some of these things are not for Zimbabwe, sister, your stories, they're not for here. Yeah, shame you. Yeah, it's nice out there, but here, just dial it down a little bit. And then what that does also is it does water you down to an extent.
Yes.
Yeah. It does kill the vibe. It does. I've been fortunate enough this time around that I'm not working for a local company. So I am actually working for a UK based company, and I have done so much since February because I have leeway to like
explore.
I am allowed. I am allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am allowed to do that. I'm allowed to just say, because at first I started off, yeah, I was thinking I could do this, and then I'm waiting for the no, don't do it. And then I keep hearing, yeah, did you try it? Did it work? I'm like, oh, I should have just done it. Oh, okay, so I'll do it. You know, so it's very, 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 very different. The last time I interacted with a company that was based here, I had a really tough time because I kept being told that, so you think that the computer is awake, huh? Work is outside, my sister, you know. But I'm like saying, okay, look, it's more efficient to work this way. You can't keep drawing contour lines using your hand. There is a button that you press and you've got contour lines for the whole country. So I can tell you, I can do this. You don't need to pay anything extra. This is all part of this simple software that I download for free. But you can't go in and say things like that because you're being standoffish.
Yeah.
So it's hard.
What I can say from that, like, I am glad that I work in an organization that encourages people to study and to be like, to go out and study, which is why I was able to get a 1 year study break and then come back. And they want me back to be able to implement some of the things I learned outside there to here, and which is fair and fine. The doing it part is a little different now. We've got COVID. A lot of things happened when we came back that are just outside the normal. So sometimes I am not going, I sometimes don't know, and I'm not going to say anything, but I'll say like, there's a certain way in which, like, I think one of the toughest things about coming back home is the reward system. In Zimbabwe, you will get rewarded for, okay, you're testing this number of samples, that's what we're going to reward you for, right? If I say, do you know what, I've done a little research on the internet and I found this out. I think we can improve our workplace in this way. That's not going to go on your performance contract. And your performance contract sometimes determines maybe your promotion and what. Sometimes you are gifted in something that is not reflected on your performance contract, but it's something that is going to improve the workplace or some of the work that you do. So like Tatenda is saying, people will say, pa computer bas ba bas. Like being on your computer is not work. But what you're doing on the computer is going to impact what you're doing outside the computer, away from the computer, right? So, but sometimes people don't understand it. The stark difference is how I felt when I came. I did an internship. I always say this because I want as many African students, if you're listening to this from outside, do it. I did an internship at the United Nations. And it was within like the first month, where they were like, because I got there around about end of November, December, they were like people giving out certificates for different things. Like you know, your bosses are watching you for different things. And I was still just learning at that point. I got the certificate that said, we love the way you're enthusiastic about learning and your energy. I got gifted for enthusiasm and energy. Do you understand? And those things will encourage you in the workplace. It doesn't have to be technical stuff, but just the fact that you're willing to learn gives you a reward. They reward you for that. Just African systems in general don't reward soft skills. They don't reward.
We're grateful
for the way you were able to talk to the visitors who came. We're thankful for that. So sometimes just in general in Africa, they want like, so did you, were you able to make us money? Like, I might not have been able to beat last year's target, but you know what I did do? I created a better relationship with a lot of our clients.
The client.
Most of our clients trust us now. But they don't, sometimes you don't see these systems, being implemented. It's stifling. It is difficult because sometimes you wish them, you want to say, let use my mind, guys. My mind is so much in here, right? And use me. Cause I want to work. And I think that's just the problem. And sometimes you come back home, it's just monotonous and your mind is not used. I think that's what some scholars from outside would struggle with. But shout out to the organizations who do recognize the mass talent pool that they have.
Yeah. This is something that I said to somebody too. Like what you're saying, like it's just when people recognize soft skills and stuff, I do feel like, and I've said this, and this is a horrible, horrible thing to say. You should not repeat it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to say it now because I feel like it's such a reality for a lot of us. Sometimes people feel like this is the place where dreams come to die. You come and you're horribly, awfully excited about what you've learned. You've spent this year abroad and you've picked up all these different things because that is the purpose of going abroad, like doing these exchange programs or any of this stuff. The whole purpose is to go out there, cross-pollinate. Like that's what it's about. Like what you find there, you come back, implement it here, and then whoever comes here gets stuff from here, they implement there, and you know, and it's just a continuous exchange. But then, like, when you come here and then you've got all these hopes and dreams, and you get there, and it's like, this is not the place.
So, I'm looking at sister, as it is, UK, Coco, as it is,
yes, and then you actually, like, I mean, you know, people say so, all sorts of things like, you guys, or you come back, and now, Mararum. No, you know, like, and it's not, and that's just the sad thing. It's like so misunderstood. I don't know why it's so when you come through and you're trying to make change or whatever, it is so misunderstood. And I don't fully understand why it's taken in that way, where it's like an offense. You know, you're coming in and you're disrupting. It's an offense. And, you know, instead of taking up certain things and appreciating some of those things, it's not taken that way. And then again, people leave. People decide to leave. And we've got so many brilliant minds out there. If we were all here right now, if we're all encouraged to thrive here, I know a lot of people who would be home. But it's just stifling sometimes.
I think Rwanda has got a good way in which they use young people. I think that's I've heard that young people are taking up space in Rwanda and kind of contributing back to their countries. And I wish that, you know, just sometimes just create space, let young people thrive. But sometimes I feel like sometimes when they create space, it's tokenistic. It's not, you know, like you've got these hubs like, no, I've created this workspace for young people. And this workspace only really is just an internet cafe. It's not really adding. It's just a place with internet and electricity, bare minimum. But when we're saying create space is, does your, like, for example, do your universities connect with industry to make sure that when this person is coming from Delta, they can make a brand new beverage. I remember I interned at a beverage company in this country, right? And I came up with this idea to say, do you know what? I want us to create this drink because this, that shut down. And then it's only when the same concept was used in South Africa. And
we only have Coke here.
No. We've got Trips, we've got Delta, we've got Minuteman. There are many. So I could, like, what I'm saying is, like, then, like, sometimes we just need people who are in charge. And you who's listening to the show, who one day may be in charge, create those spaces. They're not trying to be disrespectful to you when they say, this Excel thing that you're using is not working. Let's migrate to this particular thing. Or this, or paper is not working. Let's move to Excel. Let's do this. They're not trying to be disrespectful. They're trying to optimize the process. And they're trying to help this organization.
That's the beauty of this conversation, because the people who are listening are the future leaders, and some people are in positions where they can influence already. But I hope we won't be surprised that when we are in positions of leadership, we're doing the same thing that we are saying is not okay right now. Because you'll be thinking, this Kama child wants to take my position because he thinks he's now clever in all of that. So yeah, I hope we will definitely be different in that. And whoever is listening, creating spaces means just give me the opportunity to express myself. That's it, value to this thing, and just so that it's not all dead. All right. So the next thing I want to do is to kind of flip the switch and look at the other side of what you maybe did not like about being in the diaspora. Maybe if you had to deal with any complexities, by reason of abroad, and maybe something like, okay, here is what I heard. Some stereotypes, like somebody thinks you ride on an elephant to go to the river. And when there's such a stereotype, you have to prove yourself to be like, look, guys, I'm just an equal with you guys. Or maybe for you, it was different because you were in an educational environment and everybody's kind of like woke and they understand Africa is a better place. But maybe if you had any other complexities that you had to deal with. And then I'm going to put in a point one question to that. If you were in a foreign country right now with what's going on, how would you be behaving? With what's going on, I mean, with the entire situation. I don't know that political situation, that one that's going on.
Black Lives Matter.
Yes, exactly. And you being black and a foreigner, and you are right in the middle of it, how would you deal with that?
I would hide. No, fam. Like,
I came here to do school, and that's it. I'm not going on the
streets. That's it.
It matters. Yeah.
We have a clause, though. Like, we even, and we had a clause that told us that we couldn't, like, partake in any of that stuff.
Yeah,
we weren't allowed to do it in that way. I mean, in a different scenario, I probably would jump in. Not because. You know what I'm saying? I think I would jump in because I'm one of those people. I am, let me say this out. I have very Pan-Africanist peeps. I am that person. I am like the whole theory behind Pan-Africanism that I 100% believe in. And for me, this is who I am. Like, you can't divorce that from like as a person, you can't take that from me. And I think that's one thing that would make me go out there and actually try to make a change. Because I mean, we've been seeing so many things. Personally, I've been affected by racism, and it's really a horrible feeling. It's a horrible, horrible feeling, because I think there's things like it's like if your dude wants to break up with you and says, you know, it's because, you know, you're cooking shots. It's not on point. So like, okay, cool. I'll go take cooking classes. But then if you say, it's because
you're black.
Your legs are too long. I'm like,
you can't cut them off.
I can't change it. So like, that's the same thing for me with racism, where I'm like, I'm always going to be me. This is who I am. And there's literally nothing wrong. I did not choose to be this way. I could not change it even if I tried. And I'm being treated a particular way because of something that I cannot change. That's like the worst feeling ever. So yes, I would be the one to be up there with the placard. I would definitely go up there.
I would actually expect racism to have been an issue, because I have heard in certain parts of the UK, those people are, not everybody, but there are people who are very racially biased. When you are showing up and you're black, and it's going to be an issue. I don't know if you encountered that.
So I So the majority of the time I didn't, because one of the things I experienced is I think most of the postgraduate students at my university were international scholars. So you've got this. So when you're in your university, like
you've got a bubble.
You're living inside this bubble of you're from China, you're from this place, you're all different, you're from all different spaces, so it's fine. But there was a day when I went to, yo, things were tough. So like it was after shivening. I was trying to save money up for the internship I was going to go to because it was unpaid. And I was working. So I was working, and one of the jobs I did was a kitchen porter. So I was literally doing dishes, right? And it's one of the funny things I saw this guy. First of all, it's a humbling sort of process. But then it makes one of the things why it's okay. It's like, I'm doing these dishes, but I'm with a bunch of other university students from all over the world. And like, this person is an engineer. This person is doing this. Like, it's not, you're not there because you're not schooly enough. Like, you're there just because you're trying to get quick money to be able to just survive.
Trying to get paid.
So this one guy said to me, he's like, I remember there was another guy from Africa, and I think he was from Zimbabwe or something. He's like, you guys are hard workers. And it hurts because I'm saying all you see in me when you see black people is just hard workers. So it's,
yes,
and then he mentioned a whole other race of people. It's like, these people are not, they're lazy and they're not black people. And I don't want to say which race it was, but you're like, so and so people are lazy, right? But it was not white people. So to me, the fact that they kind of feel like we are tougher, our skins are thicker, It feeds into the stereotype that black people don't feel the pain. So there was a study recently in the UK, I think the US, that showed that medical students in 2016 felt like black people didn't feel this, black women, I think, or black people didn't feel the same amount of pain as white people, which would then mean that in hospitals, they are not treated the same because they kind of feel like your pain tolerance is higher.
You're more resilient.
So that's why sometimes you might find, you might find black women dying more in maternity wards in certain countries because they kind of feel like, no, black women can deal with this. You know, it's easy for them. So see, some of those things, when they brand you as a hard worker, it's happy, but it's like, I'm more than just a hard worker. I'm not hardworking because I'm black. I'm hardworking because I'm onai. You know what I mean? So it creates these weird expectations. One of the other tough bits is when you're having an argument with someone about the struggles that you're facing in your own country, and then they look down upon those struggles because they don't understand the effect. It's almost like, as a guy, I tell women that, no, your periods are not painful. You guys are, what do I know? When someone looks down at your struggle because it's not their lived experience. So some of those things they're just hurtful, especially when they come from people who you're close to. And I think the one other time, this time I was not in the UK, I was in Copenhagen, where a friend of mine, was New Year's. We went over to this bar, we went inside, and we came outside to see the fireworks. On our way back in, the bodyguard, the security guard said, can you please bring out your passports, whatnot? I didn't have my passport at the time, but I had my UK visa, which had my face and like, legit. He refused to consider that. But he was letting everyone else like, and for a moment, I was like, we just got in here a moment before. Like, I bought the tickets to show, like, the receipt to show that we were in here. And then I got it like, nah, I know why this guy didn't let me in. And I told my guy, because my friend was white. He was like half Italian, half Scottish. And he was mad. And I realized, you're not letting me in here probably because of my skin color. So I just gave it up and walked away.
Suspect. Yeah.
So that happened. And then we just like walked away. And that was it. So that's what I faced. But if I was there right now, I think some of us guys, I don't know where I would have been, but in any space that I'm working in, I want to use the privilege that I've had and learned to make life easier for any person who's been oppressed, especially on account of their color. That is the thing. Like, so when I'm working, cause you will see it in health, in engineering, in development, in your area of studies, like if you don't have a Zimbabwean there, if you don't have an African there, they might not translate it to the way in which we understand it, which is why it's very important to see people of color in these different spaces so that you are not just getting their solutions because they think this is what you guys should have, but having our solution.
Yeah, they're getting our side of the story.
Yeah. So I don't know where I would have been, but I would have been in a space that would have been helping black people have a piece of the cake. I don't know if it would have been in the streets or behind the scenes.
Yeah. You know, I think in the UK, I didn't really.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of the space that I was in. I didn't really get that, you know, that really like in your face racism. Racial,
no, I never got that as well.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
It was a great system, actually. Most of the students were quite open-minded. They, quote-unquote, did not see color. But it's like, most of them were great. Like I can't, like, my university created a very safe space for me.
Sure.
Plus, I was there for school. I didn't care. Like, I liked being black. No, there's something.
I got perks. I was special. People like me for what I could tell. Like, I had stories for days. Exactly. I'm that serial storyteller. I'm gonna tell you about, like. I didn't get any of that. Do you ride a rhino to school? None of that. I didn't know. Not in the UK. Not. I got that in the US for sure, not in the UK. I got that. But then, in the UK, none of that. I remember, like, my mom was watching the graduation video, and she's like, "You're the only black girl." I'm like, "Oh, I am." And I'm literally the only black person. So I was like, I didn't even know. I didn't feel like I was the only black person. Yeah. So that says something. So that means that there was none of that. There was none of that at all where I was at. But what I did see is that when you walk out of the space of the university, there were certain things. There were certain things. I've got one of my friends who's also a Zimbabwean guy who was at the University of Leeds. He told me about how he would see, if he's walking around, like just maybe from the city or whatever, he would see how ladies would intentionally cross the road so that they don't walk in that way. Like, so like just that whole idea of a black man walking around. He said he was affected by it. And I can see how that would happen because I've seen certain things. You know what I mean? And I can get it for him to say he's had that experience. I can get that. Because in general, yes, there's a whole stigma attached to just being a black man. I guess it's hard. Yeah. It's a bit harder for a black man than it is for a black woman, I think.
Wimpy, your time is running out. So you might want to ask us a final round of a question before, like, we say goodbye.
Okay. Really? My God. All right. So there's this one that you discussed. She said, the youth outside the country, they're like 30 and 32, and they've got everything going on together for them. They've got a house. They've got an investment. They've got things going on together for them. And then you look back at the youth back at your home. You're 30, you're 32. You don't even know in the next 5 years what things may look like for you because of the situation and all of that. So do you think that it's because those guys have something that we don't have? Are they set up for success? Are they intentionally going for success? Are they taught some way that we're not? What is it that, is there something special about them that's not with us, our side? What would you say about that?
Before Tatenda answers, I'd say, please read Wimpy's blog on that. She had some very good responses about that. So I think, you know, but Tatenda, why don't you give them your bit, what you think?
Oh, I think it comes down to, yes, the economy in itself. It's just, it doesn't give us a chance at all. So it's like what we were talking about, where in the UK things work. So if you go to work, it follows that you will get your money, and therefore you should be able to save, and therefore you should be able to have a plan. Whereas here, going to work does not mean that you'll get your money.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's hard to make a plan. And we all know that it's just a dream until you have some sort of goals. You know what I'm saying? You can't really set goals. You don't have, timelines are difficult because between now and tomorrow, monetary policies can change, and that changes everything. So it just makes it very hard. I think a lot of people in their 20s and 30s right now suffer from a special type of depression. It's this hopelessness that we have. We don't, like, we think about things like, oh, I'd love to have my own place. And it's like a really big dream. That's a really big dream. When you drive around in Highlands, drive around in, I don't know, Borodale or whatever, you look at those and you see that this is something that is so unattainable. Whereas, And even for us people with your master's degree, it still is unattainable. Mm. There's nothing special about you still, because it all comes down to the environment that you're in. And yes, part of it has to do with just the way our minds are set up. You know, so that whole thing, yeah, you know, if you don't get a job, then, you know, whereas without there, some of these theories are like, okay, you don't actually need a job. You could come straight out of uni and get into entrepreneurship and start your own thing. And, you know, they really support startups. The government itself will like hook you up, things like that. So yes, it does have somewhat of a bearing, but I think in general, it really just comes down to
the economy,
the economic environment. That's just it. Like where you're like, you can't even dream about moving out of your parents' house because how can you afford it?
Yeah, you can
afford it for this 2 months, but then we don't know what's going to happen after that. There's no stability. So you can't plan. The whole idea is you cannot plan, because for you to have a house, you need to plan. You need to have a mortgage, or you need to be able to save up. You need to, if you can't plan, you can't do nothing. That's just the problem.
All right. So I'm going to skip on a little bit on this one, unless if you're going to give us additional time to look at this. But then what I wanted to find out, the other thing that I had other people asking me or others asking about, was relationships. As a lady, when you are preparing to go outside the country, are you going to consider what that will do to your social relationships, your potential marital life or stuff like that as a consideration? So that's for you, Shelby.
Yes. Okay. So I'm one of those serially single people, so that was not an issue. That was not an issue. I happened to then meet somebody, you know, before I went there, who was there, and then we got it on. But that was not something that I was even thinking of. But I'll say this. Some of the people, because I also had the privilege of being in spaces where there's a lot of Zimbabweans who are out in the diaspora, and their general consensus was that women change, Mazimba, they change when they come here. And naturally, because I mean, you're being thrown into a whole new environment, a whole system, there's a culture shock, you're going to learn things about yourself, you're going to change yourself. So yes, you're going to change for sure. And that's something that is an issue of contention with a lot of people. So a lot of Zimbabwean couples, they leave home together and they get there, and then within 2 years, things fall apart. You have to be ready to understand how this place will change you first, I guess, and then you take it from there. That's my take on that. Otherwise, people are just people anyway. People are so the same issues you have here.
So is it like just the ladies change or the guys also change? Or
no, everybody changes.
And everyone,
everybody changes.
Any environment will change you. Just go to Bulawayo and you will change. You will change. But I think sometimes anonymity gives you so much power. So because you don't have the support systems that are existent in Zimbabwe, you don't have this accountability network sometimes, then you can then start doing certain things that you never thought that you could do. So sometimes you start, maybe in the positive sense, you start thinking a lot more different positively, because you're no longer afraid of what people are going to say. Right. So but then sometimes you start thinking negatively, where you now feel like, since no one is going to ask me, I don't have to. Like, I can cheat with a white girl because I know that the way the white women, they think it's like very different from the way Zimbabwean black women think. So you can kind of weave your way in. As I was saying before, I was really interrupted. What changes is you, every place changes you. I was in a space where I did not interact with too many Zimbabweans, which is okay. And I was also in a relationship with a girl who was in a different country as well. So me going outside the country actually helped me understand her life. Although she was not in the UK, it helped me understand her life more than when I was in Zim. I got to see like, oh, that's why she dresses like this. So that's why she talks like this. This is why she feels this way. And I'm like, ah, great. But no, I
and this is why we say she's busy. She's really busy because she's doing something.
No, yeah. Only girls are allowed to be busy. Guys are not allowed to be busy.
Yeah, no, you're not.
Guys are not allowed to do.
Like, yeah, you can't. What is busy? How?
Doing what?
What's better than this?
So I know you had so many more questions with me, but I'm sure I have to cut you off here now. I had an amazing time answering and being a guest for once. Choppy is such a wealth of knowledge, and I want to hear her back again. She's got so much experience as a human being. So does Wimby. So I'm officially branding you as Noogie Strays. So from now on, as you guys, it's a term of endearment that we give to people who are our favorite like guest hosts. So you, Wimpy and Choppy, you're going to be Strays, and I'm branding you the Strays because I never bring my Strays. So, you know,
I don't know how that feels. I'm being branded a Stray.
Don't worry, it's a good thing.
This is good.
If you know the podcast, you know it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So here's what we're gonna do.
Okay.
A lot of people might want to get in touch with you, Tatenda, on applying and the shipping process was.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I'm hoping that I'm usually ask guys. We are ready to help anyone if you got questions. How you apply?
Absolutely.
We're super there. Absolutely. Where can people get in touch with you?
I suck on social media, but get at me. An Instagram. I'll still check it. So I'm on there. Choppy _ Miley, MAILEE. Okay. So get on there, and you can literally just kind of email me.
Okay.
Yeah, email me. So that's choppytn @gmail.com. Then I will get back to you. I'm not doing Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, it's a tough place.
It's a tough place.
I found out your second name from Facebook, which is really fun. So
sorry?
I found out your second name from Facebook, which is really cool. So yeah.
Noreen, yes.
Yeah.
We go by that. It's Taribas.
It's Taribas. I feel you. Wimpy, you have been an amazing host. Do you have anything you want to tell us about your future endeavors? Number one. Number two, where can people get in touch with you? I know you've got a very creative mind and stuff.
Thank you. Yes, I like dabbling into creatives here and there when I can. Mostly I like Instagram because I like writing a lot and sharing a little bit of bits of things. And then I'm looking into doing something that brings conversation into the world. I'm still working on that, as you might know. But if all goes well, you'll be seeing some new things, some content, yeah, along those lines. And I also blog about anything and everything from this or that, everything.
What's the name of your blog?
I just recently changed the name and I don't remember it.
Wow.
No, it's actually called Connecting Word. It's Connecting Word. I have three of them. So I was trying to think which one am I posting on right now? Mm. Yes. So the one that's currently Connect in Word.
Okay, guys, get yourselves there. Yeah. So what's your social media? What's your Instagram? Yeah.
My Instagram is Wimbikai _HRM.
Okay. Not Wimbikai, Wimbikai.
Wimbikai with a W.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Just like Wimpy. So that's all. Yep.
Guys, I'm very grateful for everyone who has listened to this podcast today. Like I say, these conversations are conversations we keep going. I'd like to give a big shout out to the feedback that I got from the consent conversation that we had last week on consent and creating safe spaces for women. I like the arguments that I had from guys, especially like, you know, so are we supposed to ask girls for compliments before we compliment them? Like, sorry, ask girls for permission to compliment them. And you know, listen, ask the women around you. Ask the women around you, find out about from the women around you, let the conversations keep going there. We want to create a platform where we can all talk together. We have a Facebook group called Noog Nation, and I want to kind of start having conversations there. But I know some of you guys have started leaving Facebook, and we're thinking, do you want us to create an account on 99, the other guys, an Instagram account where we post and talk? Do you want us to talk on Twitter? Let me know. I'm online on all social media platforms that are okay, that are cool. So Instagram, Twitter, find me there. Thank you very much for listening. I appreciate you. Tatenda Mchopa, I love you with all my heart. Thank you very much for jumping onto this podcast.
Oh, Wimpy, yes, honey.
Not all my heart is yet, but you're getting there. I'm so happy.
And I love you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great. No, and we're going to have you soon, like we had mentioned before. And remember, guys, take care of each other. Love each other. This is 99, the other guys. I'm figuring out adulthood in 30 or so minutes, which is usually more than 30 minutes. So, guys.
Bye.
Peace out. And now. Capital 263.